Welcome back to Living Our Breast Lives, episode 23, a podcast not only about two women thriving with metastatic breast cancer, but also self-love, appreciation, and an overall awakening to this beautiful gift we call life. Each episode, we will be focusing on a different theme that will highlight each episode. Please don't forget to not only tune in, but to also subscribe and review. Welcome back, and thank you for tuning into our podcast, Living Our Breast Lives. My name is Ren, and joining me today is special guest, Miss Kate Kelly. Kate, I am so glad you could join us for our Thanksgiving episode today.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been a fan. I'm sure I'm always in your DMs. I love what both of you have done with this, and I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we are so excited for you to be here with us. So first off, happy Thanksgiving to everyone listening. Today, we have a packed full episode for you. But I do want to go ahead before I forget and just kind of put a trigger warning out there for today's episode, just for anyone who, you know, has lost a loved one due to metastatic breast cancer. But before I get too ahead of myself, let me introduce our guest for today. So Kate and I have actually never met. She's been featured on two of our Instagram segments because of how much her story resonated with me. And also just because our stories are oddly similar, you know, both diagnosed MBC in our early 30s with a quick turnaround showing no evidence of disease. Most importantly, just both of us trying to navigate being a young cancer patient while advocating for our community and making sure our voices are heard one way or another. So Kate, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone and maybe give us just a quick synopsis of who you are.
So my name is Kate. I am 36. I live in Phoenix, Arizona. I work in the financial industry as a compliance professional. I am a proud dog mom of two fur babies, rescues, of course. They are just my favorite things. They're my why, kind of. But I was diagnosed in February of 2020 with triple positive metastatic breast cancer. I had no risk factors, no family history, really, no genetic factors. We found out later, just, you know, not picking a short stick, I guess. And I had found my lump. I think similarly to a lot of young women, was told it's nothing. It's dense tissue. Keep an eye on it. It's hormonal. And when I found it, I knew in my gut what it was, which was a weird sensation to just know that it wasn't. So ultimately, went through 8 rounds of chemotherapy, targeted treatment, and then I had a double mastectomy reconstruction, and then ultimately an oophorectomy at the end of 2020. So my scans at the end of chemo showed no evidence of disease. My mastectomy, the tissue came back with no cancer present. And then my scans at the end of 2020, after all of the surgeries, everything, also no evidence of disease. And I've been that way since, on targeted treatment every 3 weeks, hormonal suppression, oral treatment, and then a bone strengthener, because I had a single met that was adjacent to the original tumor, but on my sternum. So didn't do radiation. There was a determination made that there was nothing to radiate that they could see. So yeah, that's at this point. I just had scans in October and remain NED.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. Congratulations.
Thanks.
I know the time around the scans, it's always nerve-wracking, but when you get that good news, it makes it all worth it.
It does.
I really appreciate you sharing that with us. I would really love to have just more MBC Thrivers on the podcast, just to kind of share, you know, stories and just, again, just that overall connecting feeling with one another. I just think that aspect is so important.
It's life-saving. It really is.
And that's what drew me to you. You were such like a huge advocate. You know, you're just a very positive person. And there were so many women that I had spoken to that said that they had once spoken to you and that you were just like a big part of their journey. And so for, you know, other people to speak so highly of you, I was like, I need to have her on the podcast. So I really appreciate you being here today.
Oh. It's so sweet. I think all of us, and I'm sure you feel the same way, that because of what this is and because of the reality, unfortunately, advocates aren't always around. I mean, the the unfortunate and harsh truth is that it does still have a pretty limited prognosis, and people get very, very into advocacy and then, you know, we lose them. And yeah. So I think for me, and I know, and I've seen what you've posted and other advocates, when you are doing so well, for me, I feel like my responsibility almost is, so long as I'm on a treatment, that I live a fairly normal life. It's my, the way that I can honor my friends that I've lost and the community is to use my voice when I have one, and my life isn't consumed by this. And it's not, I'm not focusing on planning my funeral or figuring out chemo again. I live a normal life, right? So that's so important to me, to be able to help the community and to advocate for a community while I can, because I do have a small platform, but as long as I have a voice, I'll keep doing it.
I mean, honestly, you just took the words out of my mouth, because that's the exact reason that I do this too. You know, like, we've both had our tough times, and yeah, we're still going through it, but like, we don't let the prognosis that we were given or the statistics that's out there, we don't let that get in the way of our advocacy, because we are still here, right? And we are here and we're making a difference. And even if we can just help one person out there, then it really makes it all worth it.
Exactly. That's to be the person that somebody was to me. You know,
when 100%.
I found everyone that had lived beyond that 2 to 3 years that I was told, and they were all willing to talk. And so to be able to be that person to other people, I think is just putting it back out there, right? Passing it forward.
Pay it forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And like, so we hear Thanksgiving, right? And we immediately think about giving thanks and being grateful, and like, I feel like I could spend an entire episode discussing all the things that I'm grateful for, because, you know, once you get a diagnosis like this, you know, everything in life is put into perspective and you just learn to appreciate the smaller things. But like, I would say my biggest gratitude above all comes from another day like gifted on this earth. So, I mean, I would probably say just life, like survival. So I want to ask you, you know, what does it mean for you to be sitting here, you know, able to have another Thanksgiving with your family, friends, like whomever it may be, after everything that you have gone through? What is that for you?
I think when you're diagnosed, every moment is heightened. Every emotion is heightened. Everything, the highs are higher, the lows are lower. You kind of realize how fragile life is. And I think I have been lucky to have, you know, my grandparents, I have a living grandparent. My grandparents passed away very late into my adulthood. We didn't have a lot of loss. I haven't lost a lot of friends. And so the fragility of life just, it didn't hit until this, and then it's very real. And so for me, you know, as we approach Thanksgiving, I think about what I'm grateful for, it's what you said, that every day that you wake up, I'm grateful for the good moments, of course, but I'm grateful for the tough moments, the bad moments that, I wouldn't have got, because I'm still growing as a person. I still am here. I still have those relationships to foster, to grow, to mend, and everything just, you know, it sounds like a corny movie, but you know, in Disney movies, they're just walking through the forest and, you know, the flowers smell great and everything tastes good. It's just that it's appreciating every moment that you have. It's just having that gratitude of, I don't know why this happened, but it did. And I'm still here and I get to experience everything on this rock flying through space. And that's cool. That's really cool.
It is cool. It's freaking cool, man. It really is. Life is, God, it's so beautiful. And like, kind of piggybacking off what you said earlier, you know, I don't like to talk about the statistics because I think they're bullshit, but we've talked about, you know, or just in general with all of the advocacy that we do, like, we know how many lives this disease takes. What we don't talk about enough is, you know, what it feels like to lose these women. And what the hardest part of it all is, sitting here, you know, you and I, with the same incurable diagnosis, And we're just sitting here with, you know, working chemotherapy, working immunotherapy, no evidence of disease showing on our scans. And then you just, it puts into perspective, like, we are extremely fortunate. We are extremely lucky. And I think about these women who are not as fortunate as us every single day. And it just fucking hurts. It was actually my reason for avoiding the MBC community for the first year or so, because I thought in my head, like, you know, the less women that I build relationships with, the less chances I have at getting hurt when they're no longer here. But this past year with doing this podcast, I've learned that it has to be so much more than that. You know, I had to put my feelings and emotions aside. I needed to do something bigger. I needed to do something greater that would impact the lives of others. You know, like advocating for metastatic breast cancer and connecting with other women. It's about leaning on one another. It's sharing our stories. It's being vulnerable with one another. It's being passionate, you know, about educating the public together and just connecting on a deeper level so we can stop feeling so alone and so isolated. And I'll never forget a fellow thriver that's, you know, no longer with us. She said, it truly is the worst club with the best people. And that always resonated with me because it's true. It's like, no, you don't want to be a part of this club. You don't want anybody that you love to be a part of this club. But when you really dive in and you meet who is a part of this club, you can't help but fall in love with these people. They're just amazing. And I just think as a whole, I wish there was more that we could do, you know, besides advocating for ourselves and for everyone else. But I know that this is what we have in this moment of time. And so we have to make the best with what we have.
I totally agree. I think in connecting right off the bat for me, I applaud you being able to stay out of it for that long, because I'm like an information junkie. I just have to, like, almost to the point of like analysis paralysis with any decision I make in my life. And that's like a conversation for a completely different topic on anxiety, but I just like, I have to have all the information. So as soon as I was diagnosed, I was reading every article. I was connecting with anybody I could find. And I think one of the hard lessons to learn in cancer is just because you have cancer in common does not mean you would have anything else. And so, you know, having to filter through that and having to find who were at a place that was not triggering and was not scary. And I think for me, after that, I had to take a pretty significant social media break in 2021, because it was just, I was navigating like guilt and imposter syndrome almost of, was I correctly diagnosed? Is this right? Am I the same as them because I'm NED, or I only had one met site, and so that doesn't make me the same? And navigating those own feeling, my own feelings, while trying to also see people that I had connected with only months earlier pass away very suddenly. I think that was a really scary thing for me. I had one friend who was very, very dear to me. She was diagnosed with early stage, and in the time that I went through chemo and everything and became NED, she progressed and passed away. And that was, I think that was the single hardest one for me to navigate. And I think about her every day. I see her family runs a page in honor of her. And for me, it was about shifting that fear of losing more friends into, in my mind, kind of framing it as continuing their legacy, that we are a small group of people, but together we're loud. Everyone is one call away from this, and they're so ready to participate in advocacy for MBC and to, you know, push back on awareness campaigns and shift to, we don't need awareness. We need action. We need funding. We need better collection of MBC statistics and occurrences, because we know that SEER is not capturing certain populations because of the way it's set up. So there's all those things that we can really hone in on and focus on. And for me, that helps me to push forward in losing them and understand that it's part of this shit stick yep. that we grabbed, that didn't grab, was handed, shit stick handed to us, that's part of it. And you just decide how you're going to handle it. There's no right way. There's just the right way for you. And the right way for me was to continue to use my voice, my platform, even if it's one person that I touch, that's continuing their legacy, because those people that we lost touched me. They were there for me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I'm sorry that you lost somebody so dear. You know, it just brings up so many feelings because you sit there with the same diagnosis. We've got the feelings of pain, anger, fear, disbelief. And then the grief is the hardest part, because it's like one day you were talking to them and the next you're not. I mean, I don't know. For me, I kind of broke down each one of those feelings, and feel free to like chime in and add anything that you want, Kate. So the first one that I wanted to talk about was pain. So for me, my feelings behind pain, you know, it's just like this newfound hole in your heart. It's knowing that the person couldn't be saved, but enraged because we know as NBC Thrivers that more could have and should have been done. You know, it's knowing that this person, gosh, I mean, was a child, possibly a sibling, a parent, cousin, aunt, friend, like whatever the case may be, this person's life mattered, and yet they're no longer here with us today because of a disease that I would say sadly is under the radar and then hidden behind all that is pink. So those are my feelings behind just pain in general when we experience these losses.
Yeah, I think that hits it on the head. There's in the advocacy groups that I am a part of, one of the big topics is, unfortunately, you know, awareness campaigns, awareness month, that was born out of a need to highlight the importance of awareness of your own body, of needing to have mammograms, of screening. But it never, and this is my opinion, it never evolved past that. And it's continued to stay about awareness. And mm-hmm. I don't know anyone who's not aware of breast cancer.
Right.
I do know so many people who are not aware that not everyone lives. There's metastatic breast cancer. I think everyone in my circle, including myself, when I was diagnosed, nobody knew metastatic breast cancer. And so that's the piece that I think is so painful, because you see things like most recently, the ice bucket challenge for ALS, that raised enough money that there's a drug that's going through trials that is very promising because of that awareness campaign. And so it's like, how do we do that for NBC? How do we do that mm-hmm. for women who have subtypes that do not have good prognoses? Like, I have friends that have metastatic triple negative breast cancer, and we in the community, we know that there are very limited treatments that are not chemotherapy for them. And chemotherapy is miserable. It is horrible. There are people who choose not to do it and just, you know, live out their days in a way that's not full of side effects. And I think that's the piece that people who don't know cancer or know what it's like, I think that's the piece that is missing, is that chemotherapy is not guaranteed. Going through it
is so hard.
It's a hell. I spent countless nights sleeping on my bathroom floor thinking, I get it. I get why people stop this.
Yeah.
And that's painful. It's painful to sometimes, in having to share that and educate people, I have to check myself mentally to make sure that I'm in a spot where I can answer that in a kind way and in an educational way, because it is painful to keep saying, no, my friends are dying of this.
Yep.
It's not pink ribbons and races nope. and headscarves and smiles. I never looked like that in chemo. I looked like walking death. And so that part's painful. And that's one that you do, I'm sure you know, in your advocacy, it's a constant like deep breath. So I think it's important to navigate that pain in a way that you push it into a different, into advocacy, into a purpose. Give that pain a purpose is what my therapist says, which I like that. Everyone should go to therapy if you have access. That's so important. But turn your pain into a purpose. And that purpose is educating. We can't fix that people don't know what's happening if they don't know. And unfortunately, some of the bigger organizations are not doing that. So it is up to us to get loud, to educate people, to demand change, to demand that we're past awareness and we need to move into action.
I couldn't agree more. Also, going back to just some of those feelings that we've discussed, for me, fear and probably like disbelief are the biggest ones. I would say fear is because, like we've talked about, we're sitting here with the same diagnosis. You know, it might not be the same subtype, but it's still, you know, metastatic breast cancer. And it's fear of, like what you said, what has happened to them can happen to us at any given moment. So it's almost like the fear of the unknown. And then disbelief, because sometimes I find myself sitting by myself and being like, what the fuck is even happening? Like,
yes.
Doesn't that like thought cross your mind? You know, you just sometimes, like you said, like we live, you and I are fortunate enough to be like living these normal, well, I will say semi like normal lives with like being no evidence of disease and, you know, not having harsh side effects. But sometimes I just am hit with this wave of emotions of just what is even happening. It's like this sort of disbelief, because we had love for these women, right? And it's like we're mourning these losses because we loved them, but we're also mourning these losses because of how close to home it hits. It's just like disbelief that not enough is being done in the community. It just, I don't know. I am always in my feels, which I'm sure you are as well, but I'm glad that we touched a little bit on survivor's guilt. I also recently experienced a hard loss. It was a dear friend of mine. It was her mom, and it happened all too fast. I mean, health insurance took too long to approve her new treatment plan. And before we knew it, she was in hospice and things just took a turn for the worse. And it's hard to put into words, because this week is Thanksgiving. And I sit here and I'm unbelievably thankful, right, to be on a working immunotherapy that continues to keep the cancer away. But I struggle with the thought of just these other women not as fortunate. It's like, why is it that some women respond well to treatment and others don't? Because even my segment for Instagram, it's like I've seen and I've met women living with MBC for, you know, 20 years. But I just wonder if the losses ever stop hurting. Like, how do you break away from feeling this guilt for surviving? Does it ever go away? Does it ever get easier?
I don't think it. Well, first of all, let me say, I'm so sorry for your friend and for you and for her mom and her family and loved ones, because how common is that story that health insurance plays a part in all of this mess too, that if you haven't been, you will be. It's a guarantee that at some point your insurance will be the reason that you're stressed or denied treatment or delayed treatment. That's again, whole other topic, but.
And the fact that that had such a significant decrease in her care. Like they took too long.
It's gambling with lives.
Yes.
For profit. And that is so, so angering when it's hard. And I think for me, to answer your question, I think I've stopped. I just ride the pain. I ride the waves. I ride the grief. Because I think the minute that it stops hurting, you need to take a step back, because it should hurt. You're losing friends. We're losing, even if you've never met them, we're losing lives that were valuable, that were cherished, that were loved. We're losing them, and not enough is being done. There's not enough funding. There's not enough resources. There's not enough accurate statistics of what's happening with metastatic breast cancer. There's not enough research into what causes it to metastasize, what causes certain subtypes to be dormant for decades and come back like a wildfire. That's what we need to figure out, and shifting this idea from every drug that helps us will help early stage.
Yes.
If you can save metastatic patients, you can save everyone. And right now, unfortunately, the treatment, the research, we are the ones in trials when we're running out of options. And it's like, we are the ones who need those treatments because we are the only ones who will die from this. But if you can help us, you will help everyone that comes after.
I love that.
And I think too, to point out the grief part is what's unique about it is unlike a car accident that you walk away and you have survivor's guilt and you go through it, we are grieving, surviving, and having this guilt about surviving while simultaneously still having to grieve the loss of a life we imagined for ourselves and grieve the unknown. We're navigating what happens next while seeing our friends die. And that's kind of, it's difficult, right? Like there's not an easy way to explain survivor's guilt when it's coupled with grieving your life too. At the same time, that's tough. I just wanted to say too, thank you so much for having me. I am a big believer in like the universe gives you what you need. And this time of year for, I think a lot of thrivers is especially hard when you're doing well. The survivor's guilt is amplified by knowing that the friends that you've lost aren't getting to celebrate these holidays. And it's just been so heavy on my heart. And so when you reached out to me, I was like, this is it. It makes you believe that there's something going on in the background with the universe that this was exactly what I needed to be able to talk to you and to have goosebumps because you're just saying what's on my heart. And I just am so grateful.
I'm a firm believer in those kinds of things, those signs.
Yes.
And you had just said, you know, prior to recording this, that you were, you know, journaling about survivor's guilt, which is, I mean, out of this world, that then I would, you know, contact you and ask you to be a part of this episode. Like everything just kind of fits into place.
It does. It does. And those are the moments that you're like, okay, especially for us in the deal with survivor's guilt that are in that NED status or stable status. These moments are so important. That it kind of validates that I'm not exactly sure why this happened to me and why I'm here, but here's another opportunity that I can hopefully touch one other person or other people and make them have a little bit of hope. And so it helps you kind of answer that, why me? I don't know, but this is one more opportunity to help. And that's good.
It's so good. And I'm here for it.
Yes, always. We're here for hope.
Yes. If you don't mind, you mentioned to me prior that you wrote some stuff down in your journal about survivor's guilt. Would you mind sharing that with us?
No, not at all. So I think a big question for us and a big kind of, you get stuck ruminating on the why me. I feel guilty for being happy. I feel guilty for doing well. How do you share that your scans came back NED and celebrate when, you know, two stories earlier, somebody's on their last line of treatment, on your Instagram friends or social media friends. And, I think a big thing that I've worked through in therapy that, I wrote down when I was journaling is for me, getting past that rumination is more about being present and grateful when the storm breaks, right? Because that storm of survivor's guilt, of fear, of grief, it's always there. But in the moments that it breaks, not ruminating on being mad at yourself for having that moment of happiness. It's doing what we talked about earlier in the episode. It's going outside, it's smiling, it's eating good food, it's drinking, you know, your favorite drink with your favorite people. It's going on a vacation. It's taking that moment that storm breaks and loving it and knowing that ebb and flow is totally normal. And not spending that break being guilty or trying to recreate the storm. It's just learning to dance in the rain. I think that's a quote, like learning to
it
dance.
It is. And I have goosebumps for like the 10th time. I'm not even kidding. It's, I mean, what a perfect way to explain it. And like it, you make me want to start journaling just to really get those thoughts out there. Because you know what, survivor's guilt, it's hard and it's confusing. And like you said, you know, wanting to scream it from the mountaintop that you're, you know, NED, but then you, you know, you go on social media and, you know, one of your friends isn't doing well. It's, you know, finding that healthy or, I mean, should I say unhealthy balance? It's, you know, learning to be happy for yourself, but also feel, you know, compassion for others. It's just waking up every morning and being so fortunate and so grateful that you're still here and learning to try and help those around you that are struggling. It's just all about finding balance. And, you know, I don't believe the losses will ever get easier. I just think it's something that, like you said, therapy definitely helps and just working through those feelings and emotions.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the minute the losses don't hurt anymore, have we become numb to it? And that's scary in itself, right? It does. It sucks to cry. It does. Sucks to remember your friends and to know that they didn't get or even have the opportunity to even remotely be considered that they would ever reach NED or they would ever even be stable. And for that, the things that you are doing, that, you know, Brittany's doing, that, you know, powerful advocates in the community are doing, that's their legacy too. We're carrying the chances they didn't get and using that as a reason to be loud and to be, you know, I always tell people in October, I'm like, welcome to my world. It's about to get annoying. Well, but that's what we need. That's what we need. And that's their legacy. I will not be quiet until I can't, because I want somebody who comes after me to do that for me. That's what it comes down to.
That is what it comes down to. Yeah. This episode came full circle, right? It's just paying it forward.
Yep. It is.
I am going to end the episode with a little takeaway. During the time of Thanksgiving, you count your blessings and you're reminded of everything you're thankful for. Today, for me at least, I sit here thinking about those that we've lost to MBC, especially dearest Lorna. My takeaway for today is, everyone listening, do you see this big old life that you've got here in front of you? Treasure it. Never take it for granted. Be thankful for it every single day. Remember how fortunate you are. Do right by this life that you've been given and make it count. Make it a really, really great one. And for those that have survivor's guilt, hang in there. Having compassion for others is a gift. Not everyone is lucky enough to acquire it. So let's embrace that and remember that we are doing the best that we can with what we have in this exact moment in life. Happy Thanksgiving to all. And for those who have experienced loss to MBC, I hope you find even a sliver of peace this holiday season. And please know that we never stop thinking about these beautiful women, not ever. I want to give a big shout out and a huge thank you to Kate for joining us on today's episode. You have provided, I mean, so much insight and perspective, which I knew you would. I knew you would be the perfect candidate for this episode, but I also know that today's episode was a rough one and maybe even triggering for some, but deep down inside, I know that topics like these, they're bigger than our feelings, right? Like, I've learned that sometimes putting our feelings to the side just to help the greater good of our community is what is the most meaningful and the most impactful. So Kate and I, we will continue to put in the work. And I have no doubt in my mind that we will make the MBC community a brighter one for everyone. So thank you, Kate, for all that you continue to do and have done. And more importantly, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode.
Thank you so much for having me. I echo everything you said. I wish the community and all the listeners a really happy holiday season in the moments that you can find that are happy and filled with good memories. I wish nothing but that for you.
All right. And with that being said, thank you so much for tuning into our podcast, Living Our Breast Lives. Feel free to follow us on Instagram at Living Our Breast Lives, where we will share podcast updates, special dates, educational resources, and of course, health updates for those following our MBC journeys. Have questions, comments, or anything else you would like answered on our podcast? send us a message on Instagram. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And as always, choose kindness. Someone may look fine on the outside, but you never know who's struggling on the inside. Until next time, don't forget to live your best lives. Thank you.